Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and it's time now to continue with our series about the reemergence of German fascism and ultranationalism. I use the term reemergence because it never really disappeared. I've dealt with this phenomenon at great length in other broadcasts. Suffice it to say that the doctrinaire anti-communist and anti-labor stance of Nazism made it very favorable to the Western Allies during the Cold War, and they simply reinstated most of the elements of the Third Reich at the end of World War II with a thin democratic veneer. I've documented that in, among other past broadcasts, Radio Free America No. 2 and Radio Free America No. 37, How the United States Lost the Second World War. Those are available from archives on audio. I will give the address later on in this program. Earlier in the series, we've been dealing with the continuity between the old German military under Hitler and the new German military under Helmut Kohl. Sadly, a very profound continuity. We've been taking a look at the conversion of the Bundeswehr into an offensive military force. The Bundeswehr is the German military, the German army. We have been taking a look at the continuity between, in the context, by the way, the examination of the German military is in the context of the undertaking of the first German military operation outside of its own borders since the end of, the first German combat operation outside of its own borders, namely an air support mission in Bosnia. It remains to be seen what comes of that. I will note that the popular sentiment on behalf of German involvement in Bosnia has been considerable, although that is certainly a situation that cries out for international intervention. I suspect the conviction in these parts is that it is presenting a positive veneer for the reintroduction of Germany as an international interventionist military power, and that its subsequent applications of military power are not likely to be humanitarian. Indeed, the whole issue of the German role in precipitating the conflict in the current Yugoslavia and perhaps exacerbating it is one that we will take up in other programs. We've dealt with it to a certain extent already. We've been dealing with continuity between German military policy and German economic policy and German political policy. We've been taking a look at German economic policy with regard to Eastern Europe and the former Soviet Union, a policy not aimed at creating modern market economies, but at effecting political control. We've also been taking a look at the staggering degree of continuity between the policy of the German government and the policies of the various Nazi organizations, which have been very active in Eastern Europe and the former Soviet Union, pursuing policies which are parallel to those of the German government, in some cases different but coincident and merging and to the same ends as official German government policy. Beyond that, we've been taking a look at great length at the profound continuity between the German government and the Nazi organizations and individuals from which it is supposedly distant. Indeed, the involvement of the German government with such organizations as the BDV and VDA, with roots going back to the Third Reich, is something that we've been examining in recent segments. Note the profound involvement not only of the German government with financing these organizations, but the profound role of German governmental officials sitting on the administrative councils and advisory boards of these organizations. Note also that there is disturbing evidence that some of the Nazi activities and agitprop going on, German nationalist agitprop going on in neighboring countries, is being conducted by German intelligence. Indeed, one of the most visible and active of the Nazi leaders, Ewald Altans, a protege of SS man Otto Ernst Rehmer, who executed the July 20th, 1944 conspirators against Hitler. We looked at an article, an account of an article from Der Spiegel, maintaining that Ewald Altans has for years been an agent of the German Verfassungsschutz, a domestic German intelligence agency. Most recently, we've been taking a look at German Nazis agitating in the part of Poland known as Silesia, part of Poland that is viewed by Germany as its own territory, and a part of Poland that the Germans have been going to great lengths to effect a reunification with. Speaking of German Nazi agitation in Silesia, which parallels the German government's activities in attempting to get Silesia back under German control, we read in the pamphlet, I should emphasize that in this series we've been relying on the pamphlet Reunited Germany, The New Danger, put out by the publishers of the Searchlight magazine in cooperation with Antifa Infoblatt, a German anti-fascist publication. Of German Nazi agitation in Silesia and Polish responses to that. And by the way, this overlaps with the last segment. We read in Reunited Germany, The New Danger, at a German Nazi meeting in a town, a Polish town that was given a new German name, The main speaker was Bela Evald Altans. Sharing the podium seats were Bielefeld skinhead Führer and Croatian mercenary Thomas Henke and NO member Gunter Boschutz. On sale at the meeting was an array of Nazi literature, including the book Deutschlands Ostgrenze, Germany's Eastern Frontiers, by British Hitler fan and Auschwitz liar David Irving. Boschutz, later to be expelled and banned from Poland, was back again in October of 1994 in the town of Strzelce Opolski, where he was arrested and deported. The expulsion of the Nazis from Silesia prompted calls from Polish President Lech Walesa to the German minority to, quote, obey the law, unquote, combined with a somber and serious warning addressed to Germany, quote, if they want a war, they can have one, unquote. Walesa's words, which for some strange reason went virtually unreported in the world's media, were not empty rhetoric. German nationalist organizations have distributed huge quantities of propaganda material, including the newspaper Der Schlesier, ostensibly to maintain cultural identity, but in reality to destabilize an already tense situation and revive German territorial claims. Naturally, the Poles have become very sensitive to developments within Germany, not least as a result of fascist violence directed at Polish citizens and, on occasion, against Polish frontier guards at the German-Polish border. As with the increasingly strident claims of the Sudeten Germans, all this is known to the administration in Bonn. They should know. The German ambassador in Warsaw has been summoned to the Polish Foreign Ministry to receive several protest notes since 1991. I would note here in this regard that once again, as we have seen in regard to other territories covered by Germany, there is a continuity of policy between what the German government is doing and what the German Nazis are doing. More about that right now. Returning again to reunited Germany, the new danger. Not only is the agitation known, but in fact, Bonn is a part of it, conducting its own campaigns and conducting espionage against Poland. Only rarely, however, does this potentially explosive reality find its way into the media. Nevertheless, two examples give important pointers. First, on February 25, 1993, the governor of Opole, Ryszard Zembaczynski, criticized German diplomats for organizing subversive, quote, unofficial groups, unquote, and for holding meetings with mayors from the German minority without informing the responsible Polish authorities. Secondly, on March 20th of 1993, a Polish military court sentenced Piotr Hoffmann, H-O-F-F-M-A-N-N, a Polish army officer of German origin, to 4 years jail for spying for Germany. More recently, in the run-up to the October 16th, 1994 German elections, the spokesman of the Landsmannschaft Oberschlesien, Herbert Zaja, C-Z-A-J-A, demanded full autonomy, unquote, for the German minority in Poland at a rally attended by 100,000 Silesian exiles in Essen. Present at the event was the ubiquitous Dr. Waffenschmidt. That's Dr. Horst Waffenschmidt, a junior interior minister, who has deep involvement with many German Nazi and extreme nationalist organizations. Beginning again, present at the event was the ubiquitous Dr. Waffenschmidt, whose attendance was also aimed at cementing support for the CDU among the ex-Bela. Already in June of 1994, Alfred Dreger, D-R-E-G-G-E-R, honorary president of the CDU-CSU faction in the Bundestag, had firmed up the position with a semi-official statement that the ex-Bela from Silesia and the Sudetenland, quote, have a right to their homelands, unquote. Such vertebrous support was indeed useful because against the protests of the Polish government, more than 50,000 Silesian Germans, who already have the vote, and dual citizenship in Poland, which are denied to foreigners in Germany, also cast votes in the German Bundestag election. We've touched on that in the past, but please note that 50,000 Silesian Germans, these are Polish citizens, were allowed to vote in the German elections. An astounding development. Continuing. Despite Polish objections, German officials justified the voting on the grounds that the Silesians have German passports. At the same time, the officials urged would-be voters to conceal the fact that they were voting by, quote, sending their ballot paper in a plain envelope to prevent interception by the post-Polish postal service, unquote. More concerning the shocking German policy vis-a-vis Silesia. And again, note that Polish citizens of German extraction were allowed to vote in the Polish elections. We're going to turn next to the Germany Alert newsletter of July 10th. Of 1995. This is an article entitled Kohl Links Poland EU Entry to German Nationalist Demands. It's datelined Warsaw and Nuremberg, and it reads in part, German Chancellor Helmut Kohl delivered mighty blows against Polish sovereignty Sunday by demanding capitulation on key German nationalist demands,
as a condition of support for Poland's entry into the European Union. Kohl, winding up an official visit to Poland, insisted that Warsaw agree to German resettlement of territory which Germany lost when the Third Reich fell. Polish authorities, speaking with reporters after the meeting, said, quote, capitulation to these demands would mean the de facto restoration of the German Reich, unquote. Shortly after Kohl delivered his demands privately in Warsaw, his right-hand man, CDU party boss Wolfgang Schäuble, told the German nationalist German Meeting of Silesians in Nuremberg that Poland must accept German resettlement of territory that used to be called Silesia if it is to gain admission to the EU. His public statement came close to Kohl's closed-door demands to the Polish government. Bavarian Social Minister Stamm, S-T-A-M-M, used the Silesian meeting to warn Poland against, quote, disrespecting, unquote, the, quote, legitimate requests of Germany, unquote. And Silesian Landsmannschaft Chairman Herbert Hupka called on the German government to treat the exiling of Germans from territories lost at the end of World War II as a crime against humanity. In Warsaw, high-ranking Polish officials expressed shock at Kohl's demands. The worst part of it, one official said, is that there appears to be little international opposition to Germany's calls for our capitulating to their interests. Our sovereignty is at stake here, unquote, an official declared. Again, I would note the shocking lack of reportage in the international news media on what Germany is doing. As we have dealt with in the past, that the German plan for the post-war world was essentially to conduct it, to have the Third Reich go underground and continue its activities until such time as it could come back up overground. That appears to have lasted about half a century. In particular, I've dealt in the past with the inability or unwillingness of American media to report what is going on in Germany. That is why media voices such as Germany Alert and the Searchlight magazine, about which I will have more to say later, are so valuable. By the way, back issues of the Germany Alert newsletter are now available. More information about that in future broadcasts. Of information about how to subscribe to Germany Alert, well, that information follows right now.
If you are interested in receiving the Germany Alert newsletter via the Internet, you can do so by sending an email to ga-request@webcom.com and simply including the word subscribe in your note. That's email to ga-request@webcom.com with the word subscribe in your message text. You can also access the Germany Alert newsletter via the World Wide Web at http://www.webcom.com/tildechantry/ga. That's all lowercase letters, http://www.webcom.com/tilde-chantry/ga, as in Germany Alert. Check it out.
That again for subscription information to the Germany Alert newsletter. That last article, by the way, from Germany Alert of July 10th of 1995, dealing with Helmut Kohl, basically demanding that if Poland is going to be admitted to the EU, that they have to accede to the demands made by nationalist and Nazi elements. And we've spent in the first part of this segment and in the last segment considerable time going over those demands. What we're going to look at next in an examination of the reunited Germany, the new danger, is German activities, again, nationalist and Nazi activities running in parallel in the former Baltic states. And as we shall see, the pattern in the Baltic states is disturbingly similar to the pattern that we have seen already in parts of Poland, Russia, and the Czech Republic. Continuing. In the Baltic states of Latvia and Lithuania, too, Nazis are busy following in the tracks laid for them by the aggressive eastern policy of the German government. In these states, the reaction is somewhat less hostile than in Poland. The reasons for this are historical. The Baltic states were Germany's allies during World War II and provided some of the SS's most murderous butchers, men who cold-bloodedly killed more than 75,000 Jews between 1941 and 1943. Even today, 48 years on, the SS connection is evident. So much so that early in 1993, the German government announced that up to 12,000 Latvian veterans of the murderous Waffen-SS will be eligible to receive German military pensions of between 100 and 300 Deutschmarks per month a large amount at current exchange rates. We've dealt with this, by the way, in the past in our interviews with Professor Wilhelm Stauffer of Stauffer Consultants, those available from archives on audio. I will have information about that later in the broadcast. Continuing. At the same time, the German state refused compensation to the Latvian victims of Nazism. The friendliness, unquote, of Kohl's government to Latvia guarantees German Nazis a warm reception there. Amongst visitors have been the Austrian fascist and anti-Semite Walter Ochsenberger, O-C-H-E-N-S-B-E-R-G-E-R. Other German fascists who have been to Lithuania, another former ally, By the way, this article is translated from German. Sometimes the phraseology is a little bit difficult for someone accustomed to reading English. Also, let me apologize for my undoubtedly butchered German pronunciation. I don't speak German. Continuing. Other German fascists have been to Lithuania, another former ally with which the federal government is seeking to develop close relations. For example, Thorsten Paproth, P-A-P-P-R-O-T-H, a former boss of the Nazi National Demokratische Partei Deutschlands, or NPD, in the South German city of Konstanz, but last year active with Beuschütz and the Nationale Offensive in Silesia, made a trip to try to win support for the idea of a union between Germany and Lithuania. The Deutsche Liga für Volk und Heimat has also been on the ground there with a visiting party that included Harald Neubauer, then a Euro MP, the editor of the Nazi Nation und Europa, Peter de Hoost, and 10 other fascists. By the way, we've dealt with Nation und Europa and its genesis going back to the Malmo International of Per Engdahl in Why Johnny Can't Identify Il Duce. Continuing, that again available from archives on archives on audio. Continuing. And in 1994, it was revealed that as well as being active in Kaliningrad, the fascist Republikaner had sent a delegation led by party vice chairman Rolf Schleyer to Lithuania and the former Memeland. They are all working on fertile ground. In 1993, the Jewish community in Lithuania delivered a strong protest at anti-Semitic claims by the official Lithuanian media that, quote, Jews themselves were to blame for the Holocaust, unquote, and accusing Jews of complicity in, quote, genocide of the Lithuanian people, unquote, during Soviet rule. These claims were made as part of a wave of anti-Jewish sentiments in the public broadcasting media, as well as in the weekly paper Literatura ir Minas. Also, it has now emerged that the 48,000 circulation Nazi Deutsche Stimme organ of the NPD is now being printed by the Lithuanian state publishing house Spauda in the city of Kaunas. Now, one more time, this last item, because it's a doozy. The official Lithuanian state publishing house is publishing a Nazi newspaper, the Deutsche Stimme, of the NPD that we've dealt with before, the National Demokratische Partei Deutschlands, a German Nazi party. Rereading the last sentence, also, it has now emerged that the 48,000 circulation Nazi Deutsche Stimme organ of the NPD is now being printed by the Lithuanian state publishing house Spauda in the city of Kaunas. That's K-A-U-N-A-S. Organizer of the DL tour and a key wire puller at the center of the campaigns for the return of the so-called lost territories is, till the summer of 1994, Bundeswehr doctor Rigolf Hennig, H-E-N-N-I-G, who is resident in North Germany and runs several revanchist outfits like the National Wehrsammlung des Deutschen Ostens and the Gemeinschaft Deutscher Osten, as well as being a member of Harald Neubauer's Deutsche Liga für Volk und Heimat. In addition, Hennig writes regularly for the DL's paper Deutsche Rundschau and for Der Schlesier, the publication closest to the BDV-based Landsmannschaft Schlesien. Hennig has sought to cultivate German nationalist groups in all former German territories and in the Baltic states as part of an effort to win general acceptance of an enhanced German presence and with a view to securing the renewal of German interests in Memel as, quote, Fourth Baltic Republic, unquote. Already, it seems, the intervention strategy is paying off. In elections to the 100-seat Latvian parliament on June 5th and 6th of 1993, two fascist organizations took between them 18% of the vote. The second biggest single party with 13% and 15 seats was the National Independence Movement, or LNNK, which calls for the immediate expulsion of all Russian-born people. One of its winning candidates was the German fascist and ex-Bild journalist Joachim Sigurest, who was convicted for incitement to racial hatred in Germany in April of 1994. Again, this is a fellow who won a seat in a parliamentary election in Latvia. Continuing. The other fascist outfit to gain bigger-than-expected backing at the polls was the so-called Fatherland and Freedom Party, a front for former members of the Waffen-SS, which got over 5% and won 6 seats in the parliament. Such results, which would probably be duplicated in the Sudetenland, Silesia, and Lithuania, show that the parallel but different policies of both German governmental and German fascist nationalism are meeting with marked success. And again, we've noted in the past that the German fascists and Nazis make extreme demands, which make the somewhat less extreme demands of the German government seem reasonable by comparison. And again, note the policies of the German Nazis, such as Ewald Alton's, and on the one hand, and Helmut Kohl, on the other, towards Silesia. The next segment of Reunited Germany, the New Danger, that we're going to look at, concerns the German role in the breakup of Czechoslovakia into the Czech and Slovak republics. Slovakia was an independent puppet state of Nazi Germany in World War II. There are considerable indications that the Germans deliberately anticipated and precipitated the breakup of Czechoslovakia, and disturbingly, the government of Slovakia under Metsiar is beginning to recapitulate many of the aspects of the fascist collaborationist Slovak government of the Linka Party during World War II, the fascist collaborationist party in Slovakia during World War II. The next segment of Reunited Germany, the New Danger, consists of extracts from speeches at an anti-fascist rally held in Munich on September 29th of 1993 to commemorate the 1938 Munich Agreement. This first speech is by Jürgen Elsasser, J-U-R-G-E-N-E-L-S-A-S-S-E-R, a journalist for Konkret and Junge Welt, and the author of Anti-Semitism, The Old Face of the New Germany. His speech begins by quoting Heinrich Himmler, and this quote refers to Third Reich policy towards Eastern Europe, and as we can see, it mirrors precisely the policy of the so-called, the quote, new, unquote, Germany towards Eastern Europe. Mr. Elsasser says, quoting Heinrich Himmler, "When dealing with the foreigners, we should make it our business to recognize and foster as many ethnic minorities as possible. I mean that not only do we have the greatest interest in not unifying the peoples of the East, but also, on the contrary, in dividing them into as many parts and splinters as possible," unquote. This is how Hitler's SS chief Heinrich Himmler summarized the principles of Nazi Germany's new order in the East. Skipping down, "Take the example of the Czechoslovak Socialist Republic. After the Velvet Revolution," unquote, of 1989, it appeared the Czechoslovakia of all the Eastern Bloc countries had the best prospects for rapid European Union membership. Yet the Federal Republic of Germany, and in particular the Bavarian state government, allied themselves early on with the Slovak separatists. The Hans Seidel Foundation, closely allied to the Bavarian Christian Social Union, or CSU, supported the rise of the Slovak President Metsiar financially and contributed substantially, unquote, towards his election victory. Substantially contributed, unquote. This description doesn't come from a leftist propaganda sheet or from Rude Pravo, but from a leading magazine of the German business community, Wirtschaftswoche. In fact, it's Wirtschaftswoche. Continuing. "Out from the chamber of horrors of world history, with Bavarian and German assistance, comes Slovakia. Metsiar, M-E-C-I-A-R, and his followers justified the breakup of Czechoslovakia with the assertion that the, quote, Slovak people, unquote, had always been oppressed by, quote, Czechoslovakism, unquote. So what is the Slovak people, then? In the hunt for this chimera, the nationalists repeatedly succeeded only in re-exposing the resounding defeat of that previous will-o'-the-wisp, the Slovak state, which existed only once, from 1939 until the end of World War II, as a fascist state allied to Hitler's Germany. Without a second thought, the, quote, new, unquote, Slovakia took on the coat of arms of its historical predecessor, and members of the governing party are pressing for the rehabilitation of the wartime clerical fascist dictator Josef Tiso. The truth about the first Slovak state, which is so unpopular in the second, looks like this. After the annexation of the Sudetenland in October of 1938, Hitler prepared the defeat of, quote, leftover Czechoslovakia, unquote, and encouraged the formation of an, quote, autonomous Slovak government in Bratislava. Skipping down, where the past is so uncritically adopted as legitimization of the present, it's small wonder that its renaissance is being undertaken. The human rights situation in the new Slovakia has worsened. The largest minority, the 600,000 people of Hungarian origin, have been shoved step by step into obscurity by a language ban, while open season has been declared on Roma people by the President, His Excellency, himself. He recently declared, that's Metsiar, by the way, resuming, he recently declared the Roma to be a retarded population group, unquote, while the uncertain future for Jews is illustrated by the fate of Fedor Gall. He survived the Theresienstadt concentration camp as a baby hidden in a shoebox. In 1989, he took a prominent part in the Velvet Revolution. Yet after the political changes, he found himself ostracized by threats and intimidation. His involvement in the democracy movement had not helped. By 1991, he was forced to emigrate from Bratislava. The sole minority, quote-unquote, to prosper from the independence of Slovakia are the 5,000 cavemen, the so-called Carpathian Germans, who were cared for and pampered by the Metsiar government. And so we are back to the promotion of German interests. The bogus slogan of self-determination for nations, unquote, permits Germany not only to stick its nose into other states' affairs, but to consider direct annexation, since, if all other nations have a right to self-determination, who should deny that right to the German nation? This is the secret behind the instant German recognition of Slovakia. Now I'll quote Wirtschaft Woche in full. The CSU was active, quote, in order to strengthen the position and the claims of the Sudeten Germans vis-à-vis Prague. They have played a vital role in Bavaria since 1945 as some of the most faithful CSU voters, unquote. The following examples give further credence to the theory. By the way, in past segments, we've dealt with the revanchist policies of Germany towards the Sudetenland, and particularly the activities of the SL, the Sudetendeutsche Landsmannschaft, and its connections with German Nazis and the German government. And indeed, this analysis of the breakup of Czechoslovakia is being undertaken with that policy in mind. Continuing, the following examples give further credence to the theory. After a meeting with the Bavarian Prime Minister Streibel, Metsiar announced that the German-Czechoslovak friendship treaty would be annulled and a new agreement signed which took better account of the claims of the Sudeten Germans. Anyway, the CSU signaled with the naming of the speaker of the Sudeten German Landsmannschaft Franz Neubauer as head of the semi-state-controlled Bayerischen Landesbank that it would use the end of the Czechoslovak Republic as the green light for a new revanchist onslaught and for maximizing the opportunity for economic subversion. And as we've seen, that economic subversion is well underway. Again, the German role in the breakup of the Czech Republic should be considered in light of subsequent German policy vis-a-vis not only the Czech Republic, but also the Slovak. That concludes this broadcast. We've been reading from the Reunited Germany, The New Danger, available from the Searchlight magazine. Subscription information for the Searchlight magazine and also how to obtain Reunited Germany, The New Danger follows.
To subscribe to the Searchlight, a British anti-fascist publication, write to Searchlight Magazine Limited, 37B New Cavendish Street, London, W1M8JR, or phone 011-4471-284-4040, or fax 011-4471-284-4410.
And that, again, how to obtain the address to write to obtain Reunited Germany, The New Danger. We're virtually out of time. In the next segment, I will give the address, etc., for archives on audio that has all of the archive shows on permanent file. That's all we have time for this particular segment. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.